Here's Andy Udman.
I gave him the sleeping medication around 10:15 at night. It didn't put him to sleep, it actually caused him to hallucinate. I don't know why, but he started to hallucinate. And I killed him around 3 o'clock in the morning, just before 3 o'clock. I strangled him. And after Ian was dead, I moved him to the center of the bed. I kissed him on his lips. I told him I love him. I'm really going to miss you, but you're in a better place now. I went and I turned on the TV and I watched it for 6 hours. Not a tear.
You just switched on the TV, sat down and watched.
Yeah, until 9 o'clock in the morning when I called the local police, told them what I had done. And they came and, you know, charged me with first-degree murder.
Folks, I want to warn you. The story we are about to share with you is shocking. Beyond shocking, really. It is tragic. It is complex. There are no simple answers. I can assure you the police officer who was called to that hotel room at the Holiday Inn in South London not only will never forget that call, but probably in their career will always look back once they're in the nursing home one day after being retired, will still remember that day, that call, that man, David Carmichael. A more tragic story, a more complex story you cannot imagine. Loving husband and father from Oakville comes to London with his 11-year-old son. They spend a wonderful evening. He then strangles and kills his 11-year-old son, Ian, in a hotel room. I know you have a lot of questions already. If you heard David Carmichael when he was on the air with us a few days ago, you may still be, as some are, angry. Maybe you're one of those who has sent me emails saying, who is this guy and why is he not in Kingston? What's he doing in your studio? Why is he speaking at the London Public Library tonight? He should be in prison. David, I want to salute you for coming back to London. You're going to be speaking at the library tonight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Well, it's difficult, but nice to be here.
When you drove down from Oakville this morning, were you thinking maybe I shouldn't be doing this?
No, I've never thought about that since 2006. The reason I'm speaking out is to try to prevent tragedies like ours.
You know, there's one comment you made during your last visit which so resonated with me, and I've heard it so many times again, so I'm going to ask you the same question. Do people think of you as a killer, a murderer, and do they think you got away with murder?
I get that every day. And one of my real challenges is when I'm dealing with people in positions of authority, I have to be very careful because if they can try to incriminate me for what they thought was me getting away with murder, they will. And I live with that every day, and I've been dealing with it since I became absolutely discharged in 2009.
Pam Kalinas joined us as well. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning, Andy.
Pam, what I think is so powerful about this story is that David is sort of the living example, the living flesh and blood example of the tragedies that you have spoken of for years relating to medications which psychiatrists and doctors give to people who have psychiatric issues.
That's right. I mean, for a long, long time now, I've said there's something deeper going on that needs to be explored. You know, with 17,000 drugs on the marketplace, look at how sick we are today. Today in the news in the United States, they're saying they're close to $3 trillion budget in the medical care spending. Something is terribly wrong when we're spending that much money, we have that many resources, and yet we're still very sick. These things are supposed to be making us better, and we're not better today. There has to be something else to the another side to the story. I've been delving deeply into it for my own health because in the 1980s, I collapsed with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. And when I was sick, somebody said to me, a doctor said to me, oh, you just need to take Prozac. And I went, no, this is something physical that's going on because I had had an infection. And after the infection, I just never got well. And so I knew it was something physical. So I was really fortunate that I didn't take Prozac. And so then from there on in, Andy, I investigated nutrition, natural health, and fortunately I'm sitting here today and I can tell you I help a lot of people overcome a lot of mood disorders.
People, these are two folks in studio this morning who have been through the valley and survived. And I don't want to dwell on what happened in that hotel room in South London, but that really is at the focus of all of this. So I just want to have a brief chat with David about what happened, what the repercussions are, and just review it briefly. And I want to stress that the phone lines are open if you want to be part of the conversation, 643-1290. David, it is unimaginable to people who are listening to this discussion that we would have in studio someone who strangled their 11-year-old son. Can you, again, just very briefly walk through? To me, what's so incredible is your state of mind on the evening before. I don't want to dwell on the events of. You killed your son. Okay, how you did it, how long. I'm not interested in the details. But the state of mind that you were in the hours leading up to the event, what was that state of mind?
Well, it was actually the state of mind the week of, because I had planned this. I had researched that I was going to be charged with first-degree murder and go to prison for life. I was organized. I was calm. When I checked in the reception, they would have thought nothing was wrong with me, but I was suffering from delirium. I was delirious with psychotic features, and that is happening more and more often now with some of these prescription drugs. My mind was broken. I had several delusions going on. My son had permanent brain damage. He was in living hell. He was going to kill my daughter. My wife was going to have a nervous breakdown. He was going to hurt other children.
If I had met you in the lobby of that hotel, say about 10 o'clock that evening, and you knew me, would you have said, hi, Andy, how's it going?
I would have. I absolutely thought there was nothing wrong with that part of my mind. And in fact, a couple of days before I killed my son, Ian, I facilitated a meeting with academics, and knowing that, I probably will never be facilitating another meeting. We do not know when people are severely psychotic or suffer from toxic psychosis on these drugs. They're often very calm. One of the best examples of the school shooters, I mean, 90% of the school shooters have been on prescription drugs, and most of them are antidepressants. You know, the most recent example, think about this. The American sniper, and we'll be talking about this tonight, the American sniper who was just shot by somebody suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and being treated with psychiatric drugs, you know, he took this person to a gun range, and this is a man that had a $20,000 bounty on his head in Iraq and knows when he's in harm's way, and he got killed at point-blank shot in the head. No idea that he was at all vulnerable on a shooting range with a 25-year-old former soldier.
How do you explain that 25-year-old and what his state of mind was?
What happens with these drugs is they make you, it's toxicity, and it causes delirium or delirious. The actual movie out right now, Side Effects, ventures into it in the first part of the movie. Some people don't remember what happened, other people do. I remember every detail of what happened that night.
What if I had met you in that conversation in the hotel lobby and I had said, David, how are things with your son? What would you have said?
I would have said, things are fine with my son. I actually thought what I was doing was a loving act for my son.
But would you have shared any of what you were going through and the thoughts, or was this all a horribly deep, dark secret? Obviously, was your wife didn't have a clue?
No, my wife didn't have a clue, but I did talk with people about some of my delusions. This is the key. You've got to get inside people's minds. I talked about my obsessive thoughts with a couple of people, that my son had permanent brain damage and everything else. But who would have thought that that would have led to me killing my son?
Okay, hold that thought. Doug has a question for David. Go ahead, Doug.
Good morning. Listen, answer one, both, or none. But I'm curious, firstly, the drug you're on or were on, has anybody else done anything like what happened here in London? And the second question is, from where you were before London, where you live, hometown, you drove from there to London. What were you thinking? Where were you thinking you were going? What were you thinking you and your son were going to do?
Well, I'll answer that question first, and then I'll come back to some precedents that have happened. My son was a little BMXer, and we were going to St. Thomas for a weekend away, and we decided that, you know, this is something he enjoyed to do, and that's why we came out to the London area. So, you know, but I knew that he wasn't going to get to the BMX indoor park on the Saturday. You know, I knew that in my mind. It was a weekend away, and this was, as I explained the last time I was interviewed, this was his last supper and my last supper. I was going to prison for life. I didn't need a lawyer. I knew that I was going to spend 25 years in prison. That's until the defense and psychiatrist assessed me and realized that I was suffering from psychosis. The first question, the only precedent, you know, the drug companies are so powerful and they control the messaging and they control the whole medical industry. And the only precedent is actually from Texas. And it's a Tobin family that sued GlaxoSmithKline because the drug I was on was called Paxil, where a man, Donald Schnell, killed and just been on Paxil for a few days, and he killed his wife, daughter, granddaughter, and then himself. And there was a successful judgment in 2001 an actual person who I work for right now, Dr. David Healy, was the expert witness in that case. The organization I work for is called RISK.org, RX, as the prescription drug sign, RXISK.org. And we really deal with prescription drug safety. And it's the most comprehensive database in the world about adverse drug reactions and drug side effects. And we encourage people to report their own side effects because we're not getting what we want from the drug companies or from the regulators, you know, Health Canada or the FDA. So that's the question. I was living in Toronto. We came out to London. My son, we were going away for a BMX weekend. And, you know, the other one is, yes, there's been one precedent. But now what happens in most cases, they don't get the trial. There are other cases like mine, but they don't get the trial, whether it's other situations like this. Drug companies just settle.
Doug, anything else?
Looking for the personal side here. I'll just say to the past, forgiveness. To the future, may the Lord guide you.
Thank
wow,
you,
wonderful words. We have to take a short break. 643-1290, you want to be part of the conversation. David Carmichael, Pam, at the library tonight. Why are you bringing David to London?
Because people need to hear this story. Lots of people out there are suffering. We see the side effects here in London. You've had shows, Andy, where you're talking about the police force and how they're just at wit's end over what to do about all this psychiatric illness happening in London today. Look at all the calls that they're getting based on the fact that people are so mentally unstable. A lot of this could be due to the psychiatric medications. I'm saying let's look deeper. Let's look at malnutrition, because I think essentially the catalyst is malnutrition.
Short break. Back with your calls, your thoughts, your opinions, no matter what they are. 643-1290. Talk radio. It's honest. It's raw. And the last time I checked, we still have free speech in this country, which is a wonderful thing. Make sure, folks, that you catch David tonight at the library. It is a powerful message, even if you have no drug issues in your family. Back in just a moment right here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Some say he got away with murder. He would say, no, GlaxoSmithKline got away with murder. That's how he explains the fact that he killed his 11-year-old son in a hotel room in South London. He's at the public library tonight. What's the time again, Pam?
7 o'clock at the Stevenson and Hunt Room.
Here's the thing that struck me during the commercial break, David. I'm sitting here chatting with you, both on the air and off the air, and you just seem like the most normal, nice guy in the world. You killed your son while you were under the effect of medication for what disorder?
Major depression is what it was diagnosed as.
You say you're off drugs entirely now?
I have been for 2.5 years.
How have you made this complete recovery? Obviously not because of drugs.
No, it's interesting, and you know, a lot of my recovery has come from, you know, putting life into perspective. And when you lose everything, we've gone through bankruptcies, we've lost our homes, we've lost everything. You realize what's really important, and it's people, and you just move forward, you know, one step at a time. And right now, in our case, it's 1 month at a time, and. You know, my wife, daughter, and I have reconciled. You know, we were living in Toronto. We're now living in Oakville.
Let's talk about that for just a moment. That's incredible. Your wife and you have reconciled. How is that possible?
Well, the first thing, you know, my daughter was the very first to jump into the drug issues, and she started to research the drugs. And, you know, she discovered a lot of this information before I actually found out from psychiatrists that were treating me that it quite possibly was Paxil that causes psychosis. It's listed in what they call a compendium of pharmaceuticals and specialties as a rare side effect, psychosis, delusions. My doctor had no idea, and most doctors still have no idea. My treating forensic psychiatrist didn't know that.
Have people asked your wife, and I'm sorry to dwell on this, how can you reconcile with someone who killed your son, and what answer does she give, if you could share that?
She knows it was the drug. My daughter knows it was a drug. I know it was a drug. We now have to prove in a lawsuit that it was a drug, but it's the only drug that I was on. It's about as close to cause effect as you'll ever find anywhere in the world in terms of the drug. I was not. Paxil can also cause people to drink alcohol. I don't drink alcohol. I don't do drugs.
You're having a bad day, does your wife get nervous being around you?
Not at all.
Your daughter?
No. I'm back to the dad that I was, and I'm back to the husband that I was.
Hold that thought. Lisa, you have a comment.
Yes. Last time you were on the show, near the end of the show, you were saying that you were self-medicating yourself. You thought more would be better. So you were not taking the drugs as prescribed. Is that correct?
Well, when I was initially prescribed 40 milligrams of the drug, which was my first depression, and then I sort of went off the drug and I went back on the drug. I was prescribed 40 milligrams, and my doctor told me at the time that he prescribed up to 60 milligrams, and none of the warnings were out about the dangers of the drug. So I literally went to a library or a bookstore, read a book, read that 60 milligrams was okay, and I literally took it the way I would take an aspirin to get rid of a headache.
So you went against the doctor's orders?
No, I didn't get doctor's orders.
Didn't get doctor's orders. So when were you psychotic? Before you went against doctor's orders or after? Like, you should have been taking it. Maybe some would be alive if you were taking it as prescribed, as you should have been.
Yeah, you know, it's quite possible. If I did not increase my dosage to 60 milligrams from 40, my son would probably still be alive.
Right.
Yes, that is a very
first
thing.
So I don't know how you can go and have a lawsuit when you were the one that went against doctor's orders.
Well, it wasn't against doctor's orders. It was based on my best knowledge, based on my own research.
Yeah, but you're not a doctor. The doctor prescribed you 40 milligrams.
That's okay, Lisa. This is what the argument's going to be. Was that ignorance or negligence?
No, Lisa, you make a very good point. I think a lot of people are thinking, wait a minute.
Like, you have to listen to everything he's saying.
Yeah, no, nobody's arguing with you. And
right. Well, he just got caught in what he said.
He would say he self-medicated, wasn't
right.
that phrase?
Oh, yeah,
he went against the doctor's orders. He said in the last show he took more than prescribed.
Right.
What you're not supposed to do with any medication, because you're not a doctor. You can read the internet all you want.
No, I wasn't.
It's going to tell you what to take. You should be going what the doctor told you to take.
The doctor didn't tell me the second time. I was going to go back to my doctor. I self-medicated based, and it was a huge mistake. There's no question about it, all right? But I had no idea that this drug could cause me to become psychotic. So the argument will be, legally, was it ignorance or negligence? And none of the warnings were out, yet the company has known about this for 2 decades, the dangers of these drugs.
Lisa, let me just, before we let you go, just make a brief comment about this whole issue that Pam has been talking about for years, about the role of medications that people take, and how so many of the shooters that we have seen in the U.S. Are so badly affected by some of these drugs. Do you believe that, or are you saying the drug companies are innocent?
No, I don't think they're innocent. I'm just saying if the doctor prescribes you a certain amount to take, that's what you should take.
Right. And
if something happens other than that, then there might be other things going on.
Pam, what's up?
About 106,000 people die every year in the United States from properly prescribed medications, Andy. Over 100,000 people every single year. And these are properly prescribed medications. And that's just to the person ingesting it. This isn't necessarily addressing the fact that, you know, what happens when and if they develop suicidal or homicidal tendencies.
Lisa, this sounds like a personal issue for you. Are you going to be at the library tonight?
No, I have to work.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah.
Okay, Lisa, I appreciate it. Again, I want to focus your attention, folks, on this meeting at the library tonight. Believe me, it's going to be an extraordinary evening. Pam, what's basically the format?
Well, David's going to basically do the talk tonight. I'm going to introduce him. And he's going to show a synopsis of the CTV-W5 piece that was featured, I think, back three years ago, David?
It first aired in 2007, mm-hmm. and it was the one that raised the Paxil issue. So that mm-hmm. goes in 2007. And then I'm going to speak... Q&A.
Okay, just before we go to the break for the news update, what are you hoping the folks who come to the library tonight and hear you speak will, if you overheard their comments going out the door, what's the one comment you'd love to hear them make?
It's the reason I'm doing this is to prevent tragedies. I think if people are suffering from anxiety or major depression and other disorders, you know, there is no quick fix to this. You know, as Pam has said, there is no quick fix. Don't run to your doctor because the doctor is going to prescribe a pill. In almost all the cases, you'll walk out with a prescription. And often not even knowing the side effects. And this happens particularly to young people. So these drugs can be dangerous. People have to look at different ways of dealing with depressive disorder. And we'll have some suggestions there as well tonight to do that.
You know, what I would be moved by, if you got a call today from London City Police saying, could you come down and chat because we can learn from you. We'll be back right after the news update with David Carmichael at the Public Library tonight. Any questions? Incredible story of how he killed his son, how he has bounced back, how he seems entirely normal and nice. And we're going to have a further chat in our next half hour right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Do you have any idea what it's like when people look at you and think, he killed his son? He's a monster. Don't want to be anywhere near him. And why would you put them on the radio, for heaven's sake, Andy? Give your head a shake. David Carmichael sharing his story this morning, saying, no, it was the drug. It was the drug, Paxil, that prompted him to strangle his son in a hotel room in South London. David is in studio this morning. He's taking your calls. Let's go right to the phones. Lorna, you have a comment. What's your story?
Yes, hi. My daughter was on Paxil for, 3 years. She went kind of crazy. She left her husband, her kids. She signed her house over to her husband. She had to go back to school. She's still struggling. She's off of the Paxil. We went through hell for 3 weeks after she went off of it. And it didn't just affect her, it affected the whole family. And I wouldn't prescribe it to a dog. I'm telling you, it's ridiculous. I think, and she wasn't the same person. You talked to her, she looked at you, but you were talking through her body. She slept all the time, she gained 50 pounds, and after she got off of the Paxil, she's a different person.
Wow. David, your comment?
Lorna, there's a lot of collateral damage. That's my comment. You know, it affects more than just your immediate family. It, you know, the amount of rejection, abandonment, the confusion. You know, I try to describe my mindset back in 2004, and it might be hard for the listeners of any show to understand this, but it's as unimaginable to me today, sitting in the studio, as it is to anyone listening to this show. So I'm glad your daughter is doing better now.
My daughter's doing fine now. And another thing, that lady called before and said that you took too much of what the doctor prescribed. My daughter took exactly what the doctor told her, and she still ended up like crazy.
Lorna, I appreciate the call. Let's go to Jane. Jane, what's your story?
Oh, hi. Yeah, well, you know, listen to him. I do understand a lot because, like, I got my son who's really mana-depressed, really, really depressed for 35 years, but he won't take no drugs. And as I said, things were so bad that I walked out about 3 years ago. And the way with my son was, too, like, he could phone you and he could be a perfect gentleman, and then you show up over where he was leaving, and he was like a monster, you know, like the difference between, you know, I'm talking about very bad manic depression.
Do you believe that it was the drugs that prompted David Carmichael to kill his son?
I believe 100% it was the drugs and the depression together, because my son, like, he refused all drugs, but his depression. And I was so afraid when my husband went over there because, you know, maybe he will kill him.
Absolutely, Jane. We thank you for your call. Let's look at the numbers, Pam and David, the numbers of people. I asked you, David, and let me ask you the question again. That last time, are there other David Carmichaels out there who, while they were on drugs for psychiatric issues, killed loved ones?
Well, I think the case most similar to my own, and I was in North Carolina in October with an individual named David Crespi, who was a senior vice president of a bank, made great money, thought that he was going to lose his job and the family was going to go broke. He wound up being on Prozac for 1 week and became delirious, again, with some psychotic features, and killed his twin daughters. He is now doing two concurrent life sentences in North Carolina, and the only reason that he pleaded guilty was to get the death penalty taken off the table. His wife, Kim Crespi, is trying to get him a new trial. And I was in North Carolina with Kim presenting a session called Medication Education. We were talking about these issues. And what was surprising to me in the United States is I was not treated like a perpetrator. We had all five major networks there in terms of local affiliates. We had ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, and CNN all interview us. All but ABC actually mentioned Prozac and Paxil by name, and they all treated us with a great deal of respect. People are starting to understand this. The drug companies have known about this for 20 years. I mean, my real question to your listeners is, if they want to respond to this, if the drug companies have known that people can commit homicide on their drugs, if they've known about this, what should happen to the drug companies? I mean, GlaxoSmithKline last summer was fined $3 billion for fraud. That's the United States. In the last two decades, the pharmaceutical industry have paid more than $30 billion in fines. They are considered now to be the most corrupt industry in the United States. But in Canada, we give GlaxoSmithKline an exclusive 10-year contract for flu vaccines, and there are $0 in penalties. So my real question is, Why is the government, both, you know, the federal government and the attorney generals at provincial levels, why are they not going after the pharmaceutical industry in this country?
That's right. That's the big question. I mean, they just keep getting off scot-free. People keep buying their products. I mean, our government, like you said, is buying flu vaccines from GlaxoSmithKline, and this is a company that has a rap sheet as long as my arm. How can you trust them? You can't trust them, clearly. Just look at the court system.
Would either of you use any drugs made by GlaxoSmithKline, David?
You know, I talk about the drugs, not against the drugs. We do need medication, definitely for acute problems. We need medication. But where they're making their money right now is on the blockbuster drugs for chronic illnesses. They're trying to make all of us think we need to be on drugs for life. And that's a myth. Okay, there's an issue called healthy lifestyle that can be a tremendous intervention. It's what I focus on. I try to eat as well as I can. I exercise regularly. I've been off all medications, and I've dealt with more stress now than I've dealt with prior to our family tragedy. And I believe strongly the drug has made my symptoms worse. It's why I self-medicated. I never had suicidal thoughts until I was on the drug within the first week, and I thought if I took a little more, I would get rid of those thoughts.
We have a crisis in this city right now. I mean, city police say mental illness is certainly their biggest issue out there. We've had a raging debate in the last few days about where to put meth clinics, and we have five of them in the city already. They're talking about another five. We're hearing percentages like 1 to 3% of the population now is addicted to meth, and some of these other drugs are trying to get off drugs. What's happening to our society? I know Pam has shared her theories. We're sicker, fatter, more depressed than ever. It's getting worse all the time. David, what do you think?
Well, I think for a lot of cases, and I think it happens a lot with people around social assistance, you know, drugs are free. You know, so they'll go on some of these opiates, they'll, you know, do with OxyContin, they'll sell some of them to make money, which they don't have to claim through Ontario Works. They have all access to that. You know, at Ontario Works, though, you can never be allowed to get a gym membership. You know, like, they won't allow that, but you can get as many prescription drugs as possible. So what's happening is a lot of people are basically trying to medicate away their life problems instead of dealing with the stresses of their life problems, whether it's building their self-esteem, trying to find meaningful employment, going back to school. They're starting, and a lot of these drugs are addicting. So as a result, what is happening with the police is they're dealing with some of these issues out on the street. And again, this is strictly theoretical, and I've never thought much about this till you just asked the question. But there are people out there that may be dealing with toxic psychosis. They may be delusional. And when the police come in, instead of working with those delusions, which will be one of the messages tonight, if someone is delusional, it's a fixed false belief. You cannot get them to deviate from that thought. You've got to work with that thought. They may be thinking, no, the world is about to collapse and I need to kill these people in my neighborhood because they're aliens. Well, you know what? Don't tell them he's wrong or she's wrong. They don't get it. You don't get it. Your mind is broken. What you've got to do is work with that and say, well, you sure those aliens are going to really attack you? There is a way to deal with it, Andy, there is, but it's not confrontationally, not with someone who is severely psychotic.
Police need to hear your message. Doctors need to hear your message. Police would take a whole different approach, and I'm sure that they're totally sympathetic to what you're saying. They just need an education, mm-hmm. That you don't go in with guns blazing. There are other options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, on the show, Andy, I've said for a long time, you know, look what's happened since we've been following this low-fat diet, and we need animal fat to support our nervous system, to support our brain. And since the 1970s, we've been on this low-fat craze, and it was in the 1980s when a lot of people started collapsing with more mood disorders, like myself, with chronic fatigue. So we're basically falling apart at the seams by not eating enough animal fat in our diet. We should be getting about 70% of our calories from animal fat. And that's the way I look at it. I say, let's get the body properly nourished so that the brain can run on all eight cylinders and that they don't need drugs. And unfortunately, this message is not widely known. People are terrified of animal fat and cholesterol, and yet that is one of the key issues that needs to be addressed if we're going to undo this problem.
So you focus on nutrition, and David, you focus on?
I focus on lifestyle, but I'm not against prescription drugs. We do need some prescription drugs. In fact, the organization I work for, RISK.org, you know, RXISK.org, it's a hard one to say. It's an easier one to see. You know, we're trying to get adverse drug reactions off the top 10 list of deaths. That's one of our major goals. Right now, people are losing loved ones, and they're told through the hospitals they lost them to the illness or the disease. They're losing them to the drugs. It's the fourth leading cause of death acknowledged in the United States by the FDA, adverse drug reactions. Health Canada does not acknowledge it at all. In the United States, it's behind cancer, heart disease, and stroke. And that's just based in the hospital. If you start to look at community deaths with people and their drug reactions, because you will go on one drug, and you'll have a reaction, and they'll give you another drug to deal with the side effect of the first drug until you're on 10 or 15 or 20 drugs.
Pam, remember the show we did where the fellow called in? He had 25 different medications in his cabinet, and he just rhymed them off one after the other. Had no clue what some of them were for. Wajdi, you have a comment. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I'm just wondering, David, how does someone volunteer or help out in this cause?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's just spreading the word. I mean, you know, getting people to go and at least be familiar with the website that we've set up called RIS.org. It's a global organization reporting their own drug side effects. It's a database. So we have all the data from the FDA, well, from 100 countries, actually 103 countries, but from the FDA Health Canada. But more importantly, we believe that anecdotal data, anybody's experiences on the drugs is absolutely critical. It's not about clinical trials. 50% of the information in clinical trials never get reported to the FDA or the regulators. They get approval for the drug.
Well, actually, let me just jump in. What prompted your question? I found it very, very interesting. Obviously, you're very sympathetic to what David's saying.
I listened to the program that was aired on Monday, and then I listened to part of the program today, and I thought, well, you know, I have some time, and this seems like something that is very important. I've done a lot of reading.
Give us your 30 seconds on this issue of drugs and their impact on people who are adversely affected by their medication.
Well, I'm visually impaired. I'm also suffering from an anxiety-based bipolar, and for years, since the mid-90s, and it's affected my interactions with people and the drugs, and I think a well-balanced approach is a good idea to dealing with this. I also know friends that have suffered from the side effects of Oxycontin.
Wow, Wajdi, we're gonna mention a website in just a moment. Make sure you catch it. Short break, back with our concluding segment with David Carmichael and Pam Colleen right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. On his tombstone, you and I might be tempted to write, "He strangled his 11-year-old son." What would you write on your tombstone? What do you hope it would say on your tombstone, David, at the end of your life?
Well, I hope that I was a loving father and a loving husband, and I tried to make the world a better place. You know, which is really why I'm speaking out, and we're at the library tonight, is to hopefully prevent antidepressant tragedies. That's the only reason I'm speaking out. I do not want any family going through what our family has been through, and it's just not our family. There's so much, as I said to one of your listeners, you know, so much collateral damage to Lorna. You know, there's so much damage. It just resonates so deep for people who know you, who thought they know you, who question you. So,
we're almost out of time, but Sherry wants to make a quick comment. Go ahead, Sherry.
I just wanted to say I give this gentleman, you know, hands up for, you know, coming and saying of what he's done and owning up to what he has done. Unfortunately, like myself, I've actually also been in a situation like this where I've taken pills prescribed for anxiety, depression. They falsely gave me Prozac thinking that I was bipolar. I took that once and realized that after taking it once, it made me crazy. So I stopped taking that. I did take Paxil, so I do agree with them.
Bottom line, your thoughts on drugs for situations where people are suffering from various psychiatric disorders.
Right, exactly. But I will agree with Paxil is the nastiest drug. I've taken Zoloft. I took Selexa for years, but backing it up with psychiatric.
Sherry, do me a favor. Make sure you go and see David tonight at the public library. And before we run out of time, I just want to focus on that. Pam, tell us about the event tonight at the public library in downtown London.
Yes, it's at Central Library in Stevenson Hunt, Room B, and it starts at 7:00. David's going to do an introduction and tell his story, and then the floor is going to be open for questions and answers.
What's the impact that you hope to have? I heard you and Pam chatting about you hope to take your show on the road, for lack of a better phrase. What's the impact that you want to have on people, and what are you hoping? What are you hoping that they learn tonight, and what attitudes they form because of your talk?
Well, I think one of the main messages is that you cannot tell when someone is severely psychotic. I mean, for parents who have lost a child to suicide, if they're actually being treated, and a lot of the suicides, they are being treated. You know, I'll talk about Tony Scott, a movie director, tonight as a concrete example of someone with family had no idea, and you know, that he was going to jump off a bridge in Los Angeles. So you cannot tell when someone is severely psychotic and potentially about to take their life. And that's where you have to work with the delusions. It's no different than the message that I would deliver to the London police force. That's part of it. You've got to be very careful. But the main message tonight is there is no quick fix for mental illnesses, depression, anxiety, anything else. There is no quick fix. A pill doesn't do it. There's some underlying issues that need to be addressed, and a lot of them have to do with your nutrition and have to do with your inactivity. And that is not promoted as part of mental health. It's actually buried in small print. It's all about the drugs, and we need to get the message away from what the drug companies want us to hear.
Look,
we've been seeing, Andy, in the media lately. Look at all these stories. Every single week, they keep compounding. You know, we have
every
this
day,
Blade Runner in South Africa. There's some inference that the steroids were an issue, potentially.
The country
this
music
other country singer.
Just,
it just goes on and on.
Like, literally every night on the news, there's just a horror story of depression, anxiety, and all the spillout effects. You know, together we need to come up with a better plan than what we're working on now, David.
I agree. I mean, the Institute of Medicine says that 70% of our health is in our own hands. That's the Institute of Medicine admitting that. So it's diet, a lifestyle that we have to address, but we have to get the correct information to people, and that's part of the problem.
And Andy, I've been asked to speak more in the United States than in Canada, because there are people in my situation in prison in the United States that are trying to get another trial. The reason I'm in London is because this heinous act was in your backyard.
Yeah.
That's why I'm here.
One more time, 7 o'clock tonight at the London Public Library. Come and meet David. You may think he has horns and missing teeth and scars, and you may have an image.
I have some other classes this weekend coming up as well, Andy. I'm doing a book signing at Chapters North. And on Sunday, that's from 1 to 5. And on Saturday, I'm doing part 4 of my nutrition boot camp at the Central Library as well.
Terrific. David, your invitation to the folks to come out tonight.
Well, hopefully we'll get a good turnout, because I think you'll get some insight into how we can prevent antidepressant tragedies. And it's going to be not just drug-related. It's going to be talking about what do we do if we are suffering from anxiety or depression? And how can we try to deal with some of the issues that can prevent us from experiencing a tragedy like our family has?
Wow, David, very brave again of you to share your message, to share your story. Thank you so much for coming and visiting with us in studio this morning. And make sure you come out and hear David Carmichael tonight, London Public Library, 7 o'clock. 11 o'clock news coming up in just a moment. Our message every day is the same, because when I get in the car and drive home, I want to get there safely so I can go to this event at the library tonight and hear what David has to say. And that is eyes on the road, hands on the wheel. Please hang up and drive so I don't have to wag my finger at you on the way home, because it's not nice when Andy wags his finger, because if you don't do what he says, he'll start leaning on the horn and worse. So let's have a happy day and just pay attention while we're driving. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.